Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
They've attacked us, sabotaged us, abducted us, murdered us. We're not the only people on this island, and we all know it.
So I guess I'm out of the book club.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back.
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 3, Episode 16, One of Us. And guess what? You're tasked with making Juliet a welcome to the beach meal. What is it? My name is Dave Gonzalez. I'm one of your hosts, and I'm giving up some mango and cereal because they're finger foods, and it's fruit, and it's nice texture-wise.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I will also be serving her cereal, but it'll be like our stalest box. Because I just don't trust her yet.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm going to be honest, I'm going to play it cool here and act like I saved some leftover boar to share with someone cool and give it to Juliet. But in reality, it would have been for myself, but I just gave it to her because they just had a cookout, and I bet that boar was good because Sawyer is from the South. So... I probably would have some leftover, and then, you know, to make peace with the newcomer, I would be like, here you go. Here's some of my leftover boar.
I like this. We spent like 80 some days on the island, but Neil is still like every meal he hoards a little bit because he never knows when it's going to be the last or it's going to fall from the sky or he has to go hunting for boar.
I don't think that our characters appreciate it very much, but I would personally be very concerned about the fact that I was still living on a beach. On a mystery island.
How long is mango season? Because, like, can you imagine how bad things get when, like, mango season dries up, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Is it an eternal mango season in that part of the world?
Oh, in a jungle of mystery?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I mean, there also could be mystery mangoes.
Mango season.
Imagine there's a box in the jungle and anything that was in the mangoes, lots of mangoes. Mangoes forever.
Mangoes and tarps. Let's do it.
No, I would go with yogurt, right? Because yogurt goes really well with mangoes. And so mangoes already exist on the island.
Just
but
lots
my mystery
of parfaits.
Box would just be like so much yogurt.
I like the origin story of the island now is like a very innocent monkey's paw situation. It's like, what do you want? It's like, ooh, mangoes.
And tarps.
Oh, okay. Like, don't you want anything else? Well, I mean, no cancer, I guess. That would be nice. Oh, okay, good, good.
No babies
either. How about a third wish? Ooh, polar bears. Okay, veering in another direction again.
Zero babies? Can we...
That's what's in the mystery box, J.J. Abrams. It's yogurt.
Zero babies. Just a really aggressive guy in his 20s finds a magical island and is like, you know what? Screw the babies and the women who carry them. All right. This episode is probably not a great way to intro that way, because it's a Juliet episode, and we like Juliet. Well, we like Juliet's performance as an actress and a character. Do we like Juliet overall? This episode questions if we do. You're listening to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. We are rewatching the ABC series Lost one episode per week. We are up through Season 3, Episode 16. If this is your first time going through Lost, welcome to the show. You're probably up through three seasons now, but you know that we split the podcast into two different sections. The first section we call The Calm, and we will only be discussing episodes through Season 3, Episode 16, so as to not spoil anybody who might be going through Lost for the first time. If you, like us, have seen all six seasons of Lost, you can also stick around, or if you don't care about spoilers, you can also stick around for the second part of the podcast. It is called The Storm 4, Storm of Spoilers. That used to be our name. It was based off a George R. R. Martin book. It was very funny when it happened, but here we are years later, and that series ended poorly. Does this one end poorly? Stick around
What's for
The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. If you want to support the show besides listening, you could go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you can subscribe for different monthly levels of money. And in response to those gifts that you give us, we give you bonus content, access to our Slack. You could do watch-alongs. You get bonus podcasts every week, including, if you subscribe at our very lowest level, access to the Feels Like the First Time podcast project, which is the brainchild of one Joanna Robinson during this quarantine time. Joanna, what's going on with Feels Like the First Time now that you guys are back?
Oh my gosh, we're flipping the script. As we kind of did when the fellows here took me through the classic James Bond, except whatever the opposite of that is. So usually on Feels Like the First Time, Chris and Russo, co-hosts of the Buffering podcast, watches some sort of like very famous franchise at my behest that she's never seen before, and she talks about what she thinks is about. Kristen has decided, and I am a willing participant in this, we're gonna flip-flop. She has decided to show me three incredibly gay films that she has chosen. She has said, which we're calling, I guess, Feels Like the gay time. Feels Like a Gay Time? I don't know. A Queer Time? Kristen is famously, canonically gay. I am famous, canonically straight. She has said that this trilogy of films that she's chosen will not, quote unquote, turn me gay, but that she's working on that trilogy. She will present it to me at a later date. But this is more educational for me. So we're watching,
like, a queer cinema 101.
Yeah, but not like...
But not like 101. You don't, not like, you're not arty on that level.
I don't know. Anyway, so we're watching Jennifer's Body, which I've never seen. And like, ooh, TikTok has convinced me is like a buried queer masterpiece that, like, when it came out, it was marketed to appeal to like the Megan Fox Transformer fans. And
yeah,
really,
to those boys who had the monkey paw on the island earlier.
Yeah, yeah. And really, it's for the ladies. So Jennifer's Body, secret queer classic, we'll decide.
Karen Kusama film.
Karen Kusama. We're watching But I'm a Cheerleader, which I've never seen, a Natasha Lyonne film. And then we're watching something called Lost and Delirious, which I have never even heard of.
Wait, who's in Lost and Delirious?
At the
Eddie
very
Murphy
least, Piper Perabo.
Oh, no.
Okay. I would like to fun fact real quick. I've seen that movie.
Ah, excellent. Oh. Apparently, falconry is involved. So,
oh,
I'm excited.
Falconry is very involved.
I'm excited for the lesbian falconry Piper Perabo movie. So, we'll be watching those. This is a bonus podcast episode that you guys can listen to if you're at subscribe to our Patreon, to Kristen's Patreon, at the Buffering Cast. And we will be watching the movies together with our listeners in our Slack. And it's gonna be fun. So that's feels like a gay time. Something we're doing. Obviously, that's not the only way you can hang out with us. If you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers and join our Patreon folks, you can do stuff like watch Black Sails every day with Neil in the Slack, which is a really fun time. You can just you can watch Clue with us next weekend if you want to, which is a really fun time.
On
you can
Sunday, have access, right?
Yes. You can have access to our like mailbag episodes, to our bonus interviews. There's just like a lot of stuff always going on in there. Folks are just chilling every day talking about what they're watching, Lovecraft Country, Korra, et cetera, and hanging out with like-minded folks. Also, obviously, we do a weekly Lost rewatch. So there's just like a lot of stuff going on there. That's the Slack. That's the Patreon. You can go to stormpodcast.com to take a look at our schedule, see what's upcoming from us. You can follow us on Twitter at Storm Podcast. That's a fun way to be in touch with us. Our producer, Diana, does some good tweeting on there. And then you can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We have no new emails. So I know we're in sort of like the middle of a long season. Things are about to get really exciting and weird on Lost, though, even more so. So, like, I really look forward to your emails, especially your stormy emails. We love those. So keep them coming, host@stormpodcast.com. But we do have two new reviews, and I'm going to read those very quickly for you. But not too quickly, because someone once told me I read them too quickly. So, all right. So here we go. Five stars, one of my favorite podcasts. This is from Little Delicious from the United States. I have a confession. I don't like Lost. I do enjoy some of the characters, Sawyer, Juliet, Hurley, Nikki, and absolutely despise others, Charlie, Claire, Jack, Paolo. When all is, I love that Nikki Paolo split. but when all is said and done, there was no intrigue, no answers, no satisfaction. However, I do like to listen to podcasts about series I watch, so Enter the Storm. The hosts do an amazing job at discussing the episodes, and their passion and reverence for the show really does help me view it in a different way. While it doesn't make the show magically great for me, it makes for a very fun and entertaining listen. On a different note, when I first started listening, I thought that leaving a review ragging on Joanna was some sort of meme in-joke everyone did. Turns out, it's not. this is Joanna. It was misogyny. Joanna is an integral part of this trinity, bringing an energy and enthusiasm that's downright infectious. Her interview style is simply the best. And she asks questions that many of us want the answers to. In short, leave Joanna alone. Great podcast.
Oh, hold on. It seems like you read that part a little fast. Can you do that again?
Her interview style is simply the best. And she asks questions that many of us want the answers to. In short... And this is all in caps with exclamation marks, a la Britney Spears. Leave Joanna alone. Great podcast, guys. Keep it up. So that's from Little Delicious.
That's the best review from somebody who dislikes Lost.
I like the whole narrative that they thought it was a joke and then read the reviews for real and were like, oh, shit, they're not joking. No.
They really hate her. Okay. And then this one is 2 stars from NC Dino or Dino. And this person says, started out entertaining, but the pace is slow, real slow. With a full week between podcasts, they could review 2 or 3 episodes. But to wait 7 days for a podcast which only focuses on a single episode, they inevitably have to add so much filler, lots of repetitive stuff. Wish there was more focus on character and plot. Wish I could keep listening, but I'm losing interest fast. So, I will say 2 things. Number one, we're not going to necessarily speed up the pace of the podcast. I don't think that's something we are seriously, seriously considering right now. There's actually a movement. There's been a couple trend pieces written about this actually in the podcasting world, that there's a movement with these rewatch podcasts to like, it's like the slow food movement. It's like the slow watch movement, versus, you know, the binge model, which is sort of pervading everywhere. And I understand we're eager to just sort of consume and binge. And that's what we do with TV these days. And the point of a rewatch is to slow down, marinate with a story for a week, that sort of stuff. So like that's sort of that slow watch aspect is sort of part of the point of what we do. So I don't imagine that changing dramatically in any way. Do you guys have any thoughts or feelings about that?
I've also been thinking about this lately because we've been doing an episode a day with the Slack as part of our Patreon. And that as well seems to be too slow sometimes for folks. And I find
that's for Black Sails.
Black Sails. So I think... there is something to slowing down, you know, and to like, if we remember back to like where this podcast came from, it's the idea that we would sit with an episode of Game of Thrones for a week. And, I was joking the other day with one of my housemates, hey, wouldn't it be interesting to rewatch Game of Thrones? And he's like, absolutely not. I've seen every episode of Game of Thrones like 10 times.
Yeah.
But that's part of the joy of doing a deep dive podcast, where it's like we can take a week, we can go slow, we can watch it with our Slack, I watch it twice at least before recording the podcast at this point. That's the right pace for me, I think. And that's sort of why the podcast is worth doing. So yeah, I think that's one of the fundamental theories of our podcast, which is, yeah, binging is great for some shows, but there are shows that are dense and worth unpacking in a myriad of ways, and going a little bit slower, you kind of savor it. I don't know.
I will say with some of these like 22/24 episode seasons, like you can feel a little sag in the middle.
And Lost is about to feel very fast.
That's
in the
about
last
to be
seasons.
Not the case with Lost.
right? Yeah. I mean, we were, you know, it's season 4 is 15 episodes, season 5 is 15, right? They're all 15 episodes from here on out, basically. Thereabouts.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, get ready.
We're already in episode 16 that we won't see again for a long time.
Well, and it's funny because I joked with someone the other day about the Black Sails watching it once a day. And I was like, at a certain point, the mood changes. At a certain point, you get across the midpoint of a show and people start. And as you're rewatching, you're not thinking about how far in you are. You're thinking about how much is left. And we are almost there with Lost to the point where you're going to start thinking, counting down the episodes to the end. And so, it's great.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, man. Have a glass of OJ with some Quaaludes in it or whatever and enjoy the ride. It's fine. Don't drink it all at once. Sip it and you'll have a good time.
Right. Yeah.
So always sip the Quaalude OJ.
You know, Lost was meant to be consumed once a week. That's how they watched it the first time, and I think that actually is kind of the right pace for Lost.
There's nothing wrong with, like, binging, especially a new show that you, like, really want to know the answers to the mysteries. But I guess the point that, you know, I think we spent more time trying to make at the beginning of this rewatch, and I swear we will get to this episode, which I quite like, but the point we were making towards the beginning of the episode, when we were thinking a lot about the end of the episode, is that the mysteries, though they were a driving force of the fandom of Lost, not really the point of Lost. I understand you wanting to know like Saeed, you want to know the answer to all these questions. You're going to ask Juliet all of them and she's going to be like, oh no, I'm not going to answer those questions for you. But what's really, you know, and this episode I think is a good sort of microcosm about it. It's not really, we actually get a number of big revelations in this episode. But for me, what I take out of this episode is, like the character work on Juliet. And the rich filling in of her backstory. It's been, you know, like Juliet, we've talked about this before, but like, not to skip ahead. I know that Neil's going to do a fantastic recap, but like, we're tired of knowing more about Jack's past, but Juliet and Desmond and a few other newcomers, I would add Ben to that pile, are people I am curious about who they are, how'd they get here, and how will that help me contextualize, you know, where they will relate, how they will relate to our losses going forward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, hey Neil, what happened on Lost this week?
Ooh, we got a good one. One of Us is the episode we're talking about. This was directed by Jack Bender, who also we remember from our Game of Thrones days. It was written by Carlton Cuse and Drew Goddard. It aired on April 11th, 2007. And it takes place on days 82 through 84 on the island, so plenty of time for that boar to still be good. In flashbacks, we learn about Juliet's time on the island, basically from when she leaves, including all the ways in which Ben manipulated her into staying on the island. It also involves a glass of orange juice filled with tranquilizer. Did we ever find out what those tranquilizers were? Were they Quaaludes? Who knows?
I just made them Quaaludes because it feels like a very Dharma initiative thing to do.
It really does. We also learned about how Juliet was brought in to research why pregnant women on the island keep dying, and about how her life was further complicated by the arrival of Flight 815. She really just wanted to go home. On the island, back in the main timeline here, Saeed remains very good and very skeptical of Juliet, and under Jack's protection, Juliet is coming back to the beach camp. Back at the beach camp, Claire is mysteriously ill. And just as Sawyer is about to solve her problems with a generous dose of aspirin, the away team returns. Sawyer is notably unhappy to see Juliet again, as are the rest of our campers. But in order to save Claire, they must band together and trust that Juliet knows where all the best Dharma drugs are stashed. She saves Claire and earns herself one of the camp's many tarps. It all ends with the reveal that while she is a very formidable presence in this jungle of mystery, Saeed is right to be suspicious of Juliet. Fun fact, Saeed is very good. And Ben plans to return in 1 week. That's something I feel like we should remember. This week's calm question in this episode, a great many crimes of the others are discussed. Many are lobbed right at Juliet, even though she had the day off. If you're one of the other survivors, what do you think would be the most egregious crime that the others have committed so far? I have a couple examples, but you guys don't have to use these. Some examples would be breaking all the bones in Scott's body.
That's it.
Ethan.
That's the one. That's the one. Every bone.
All
everyone.
Of them. Yeah. Yeah. Hanging Charlie from a tree. This one was also Ethan. And then this one, which I think gets overlooked, filming and then sharing Kate and Sawyer's intimate moments without their consent. And I'm crediting this one to management because this kind of felt like a Juliet Ben team up operation. And I'm not comfortable with how they handled it. So that one would be mine. Dave, do you have a preference of what their worst crime is? Against our survivors. I mean, we don't know what their worst crimes in the world are.
Yet. I was going to say, we know they've been stealing children, but we've just taken everybody's word for it that it's totally fine.
Cindy and the kids seem to be pretty okay with what's happening.
Yeah. We saw them once, so therefore it's okay that's been going down and secretive.
Sure.
I'm going to go with breaking all the bones in Scott's body, though, because Joanna's right. That's jungle creep overboard.
Yeah.
I was trying to people that we now know are humans.
Okay,
Since Goodwin appears, I was trying to find one for Goodwin, but he really just gets killed for lying to Ana Lucia, which
but he's like complicit in like some all the grabbing of the people.
He is the organizer of the kid snatching.
Yeah.
I guess he did make the list of kids.
Goodwin's not off the hook. Ethan is obviously our public enemy number one, which is why I'm going to go with kidnapping Claire and drugging her and holding her hostage. Like, I don't really care that they're trying to like retcon that as to be like, oh, it's out of concern for Claire. Mm-hmm. Because the pregnant women on the island, like, not retcon. This is, something I want to talk about actually a lot, but like, the idea that this is kind of that they've done a version of this the third time, which is the other 48 days, right? That's the number. The other 48 days, expose, and now this are all different versions of things you've seen from a different point of view, right?
Right.
Let's recontextualize Ethan and Goodwin.
Until the very end, right? Because the implication about that last that I get in that last scene with Ben and Juliet talking is that whatever Ethan did to Claire is what makes her sick, or did they send someone to make her sick? Like, how did that?
That there was an implant in her
they triggered.
So, like, who? Ethan did the implant. So, like, add that to his list.
Yeah, but like, what's wrong with walking out of the woods and being like, "Hello, we are the inhabitants of this island.
You are in danger.
Pregnant women don't do well here. Will you come to my lab hatch?"
You have stumbled across our first corner for this episode. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, goes to Juliet, who says about Ethan, he kidnapped her on his own. That was never the plan. I think that was the plan.
I feel like a big theme of this episode is we're not supposed to be entirely sure how much we trust anything Juliet says, especially to the other, to the survivors, where it's like, we know she's lying to them. Whether or not she's lying to Jack or Ben or like other people that are sort of hip to the whole, we have a village thing. I kind of go through this entire episode assuming, and it's based on this wonderfully vibrant performance that Elizabeth Mitchell gives underneath, you know, all the mystery is like, she's just strong arming everyone at every turn and she just crushes it. It's like, yeah, I don't think we should trust anything she's saying right now.
No, of course not. But at the same time, it's like they are trying to, with this whole like women who are pregnant on the island are in danger. They are kind of trying to recontextualize,
What they did to Claire.
And I'm like, you know, honesty is the best policy for me here. And if I were Ethan, I'd be like, hello, would you like this orange juice with some Quaaludes in it? Like, that's the Richard Alpert approach, right? Like, here's some orange juice. I have dumped a powder in it. It's going to knock you out. That's why I love Richard Alpert, right? Because he's like...
He's very direct and open.
He's like,
about to happen.
I'm about to drug you. Here we go.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess... me asking, why are you doing this very dangerous thing that seems like a bad idea?
I mean, I guess you could really, who is making better choices right now, better like trust-based choices? Is it Jack putting all of his trust in Juliet? Because that's what's really happening here. Jack is like forming a wall around Juliet.
She's under my protection.
Ooh. Yeah, big man. Mm. Or Claire letting Charlie babysit, given that he has recently stolen her baby. But honestly, Claire looks like the more sane decision maker here, because Charlie does well in this episode. He's also very skeptical of Juliet.
Claire is straight up not having a good time.
Claire's not having like a good episode. Not a lot of agency in this episode.
Yeah,
she gets to be there and be sick, and then wake up and be like, oh. Now I'm fine. What happened? I spit up some blood.
Oh,
but I think there are three teams you could be on and not really be like wrong. So I want to present this as where we are currently. So there's Team Jack and Juliet, which is, you know, they're going to look out for each other. We think from the ending of this episode that's probably not the trustworthy team. But for all we know, Juliet's playing a long game, because spoiler alert, Juliet and Ben is not going to be one of these teams, because I don't think that's a trustworthy team on either side. Team number two is Team Sawyer and Saeed, who seem, you know, maybe a little aggressive, but Saeed does say he's not going to, like, torture people anymore. So a thorough questioning of Juliet seems like, you know, something that should be happening. And then I think the third team you could have here is just Team Juliet and herself. She wants off the island. Ben isn't going to give it to her. The actual Losties on the beach don't actually have a way to get off the island, so she's could be just fighting for herself and hopefully playing both sides. Based on how she leaves the situation with Ben, it seems like Ben might also be planning for that third option. So is anyone willing to declare allegiance to one of these three teams?
No, but I will create a fourth team and declare
allegiance. All right, here we go.
It's Team Hurley, which is friendly but cautious and honest.
And also pointing to where Ethan is buried.
Friendly, cautious,
subtle death threats. Hurley.
I love her. I mean, that's one of my favorite scenes in this whole thing. But I will. Okay, so I do, just to stick up for Juliet on her own team here. You do sort of see how she's getting there, and this episode does a good job of, especially in that scene where she just loses it and is like, I just want to go home to Ben. You understand why she was trying to figure out a way to get on that sub with Jack. You understand why she might still be willing to go along with whatever Ben's plan is here. He's going to come back in a week. You can see that her driving force is, I'm going to get off this island and I need to survive long enough for that to happen. Currently, it is her best option is to be paired with Jack, because these other survivors, you know, they're not having it. So it makes sense to me. I mean, I don't know if I'm on the team. I think Juliet she is very compelling for that reason, where it's like, now we're inserting someone, she's like a blue-eyed agent of chaos.
we were reading an older interview, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, whatever, about Juliet and how the fan reaction was extremely positive to this idea of, like, we don't know where her allegiance lies. Mm-hmm. You can just see them, like, lean into that and lean into that and lean into that. And Elizabeth Mitchell knows how to play that so well, with her like serene smiles and then like, you know, knives out when she needs them sort of thing.
She almost charms Hurley for a second. You can see it in his face.
But the thing that this episode does so ingeniously that I love is like, all right, well, you know, we give her an emotional backstory. We already met her sister, but this idea that like her sister's cancer, her nephew, whose name is Julian, like all the sort of stuff like that. She was in a relationship with Goodwin. She like, you know, we're giving her like a lot of, we're putting a lot of meat on the bones of Juliet in this. But when is someone the most dangerous is when they have something like really important to lose. Right. And so like, you know, Juliet's reasons for wanting to get back home are incredibly sympathetic, incredibly emotional, all this sort of stuff like that. But that makes her incredibly dangerous to our other protagonists, because whether or not if she decides that Ben is her best bet to do that, she may well fuck them over. And if she decides that they're the best way for her to do that, she will fuck Ben over. And I think what we've seen from her so far is that she would prefer to fuck Ben over because she's pissed at him for all he's put her through. But most of all, her priority is to get home. You know, and it's similar to Desmond that way. Like, I think the two of them are the ones who are most anchored to like someone to get back to, right? Out of everyone who's on the island?
So far, yeah.
Because most everyone else is like running from something, right?
Right. We don't really know. I think that's one of the more interesting things about some of our main survivors is that we know a lot of why they got to the island. And some of the reasons why they might want to get off the island. But it is also interesting. You do start to question at some point, like, you know, are some of these people just better off on this island? You know, on this beach, you know,
I mean, you know, I think Rose in the episode SOS, which is like one that people overlook, but like Rose is like, guess what? I'm not going home.
Right.
Guess who's not sitting here? Me. So
is there a movement building inside the camp around the galley, the open air kitchen that some sort of stay on the island, hashtag stay on the island movement. We'll see.
Something I want to bring up really quickly about the revelation this episode that like pregnant women on the island often or almost always, other than Claire, die like a gruesome death. I want to bring that up because you guys remember the conversations that sprung up around Avengers Age of Ultron when like there was a storyline with Black Widow and her infertility and how she felt like that made her a monster and all that sort of stuff. And I feel like for the first time in a mainstream pop culture conversation, you know, for a long time, infertility is not something women or, you know, it affects men as well, talked about, because it felt like shameful and something you weren't allowed to talk about. But it is an incredibly painful, you know, experience for a lot of people, infertility. And so I just want us to keep an eye. I mean, like, I made some jokes at the beginning of this podcast, but I want us to keep an eye on something. This is not a conversation I remember happening at all when Lost originally aired. But I want to keep an eye on our conversation around infertility as like genre plot point when it is something that is incredibly like personal and painful for a lot of people, and the way in which I don't think that occurred to the writers putting this show together. I don't think it occurred to Joss Whedon necessarily when, you know, he was putting together Avengers Age of Ultron. And it doesn't mean that it's malicious. It just means that the way in which we've talked about it has, the needle has moved on that significantly since this came out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to revisit because, like you said, that's not a storyline that I remember. You know, among the like Lost storylines that you feel are iconic, that one sort of does get pushed to the background, or at least wasn't as discussed back in old 2007 when we were watching this show. So that is really going to be fascinating.
When we were watching the show, when most people who were talking about the show, at least like on a platform, were men, you know, that sort of stuff. It's just like, and just women weren't talking about infertility. It just wasn't a thing that they were talking about. So it's just, you know, it's good to think about. Obviously, this presents from a plot point of view, this presents like our knowledge of this, our knowledge that like Claire and Aaron are some sort of like miracle situation here. Puts Sun in clear and present danger, right?
Right. Who's yeah, pregnant. I think that's something that's easy to miss in this episode if... I don't know. There's a lot going on in this episode, and I feel like maybe I missed it the first time, what sort of danger that presents to Sun. So yeah, it's because you only really get that one look, you know, that one little camera pan that pans to Sun. But reminder.
I mean, enough that they call it out in this week's official podcast episode. They're like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, I bet that means something for Sun, which I think occasionally they did when they realized that the episode, you know, got cut together with something they didn't expect. But yeah, it's the mysteriousness about like now with Claire and the pregnancy and sort of the retconning of why that is and who, if anyone, was in control of it is all getting a little bit more muddy, just because, like, didn't we think at one point it was the sickness? This weird, like, what the injection was to protect the baby from the sickness, mm-hmm. not Claire from anything?
That was sort of the information we got from Rousseau.
Right. And then Charlie thought of that enough to Pat to go get some more drugs. So at some point we thought, like, the sickness was a real thing, and now we're, you know... And, I mean, I like this episode because we spend so much time on backstory. I think on Lostpedia it says there's actually more runtime on backstory than there is on Island this week. And the character's so good, and Elizabeth Mitchell is so good, that
so
you
good.
You kind of don't notice that the writers are tying up all these little pockets around her with retconning Ethan, with trying to make this pregnancy thing a little bit more focused around Juliet. I think the... one of the smartest things that they do in terms of using this flashback is, you know, go back and we've heard Ben say before that he learned about the tumor, like right before the plane crashed, but sort of contextualize how close those two events were, because there's this huge time jump when suddenly she's in bed with Goodwin and she's like, I've been here for 3 years. And one of the things about Lost that sort of talks around with his flashbacks is if there's a time jump in a flashback, usually there isn't a gigantic change in someone's perspective. But because Juliet is the type of character that she is, I kind of don't know how much she ends up trusting Ben in between. I'm going to let you go back to see your sister. Oh no, she has cancer. Look at the stack of papers, to cut to 3 years later, when she finally, you know, challenges him. So it's a very sneaky episode, and it tells us a whole bunch of stuff, but the things that it implies are either bigger plot holes or avenues we have to immediately turn down, I think. For instance, do you guys think Rachel ever actually got cancer again?
I don't know.
Because Ben mentions Jacob as, right, like, this person who has the capability of reaching off the island and doing, right, things, which is a new thing, a new power of for anyone on the island, as far as we know. But that, right, being said...
Well, so far, the healing properties that we've seen, Locke being healed, Rose being healed, we've attributed to the island, right? Mm-hmm. And so now there's, correct, like, and we've heard of Jacob, but now there's this sort of like personification of whatever the island healing magic is in a person named Jacob, and it extends off island. Like, that sounds...
It's a big claim.
Ben lies. You know what I mean? Ben lies. So,
yeah, I mean, they're hyping up this Jacob guy at this point to be really impressive. So I can't wait to meet him personally.
Yeah, because if both of these characters who we consider the master manipulators on the island are scared of him, it means something. And yeah, extending the island's powers off the island, it seems like if that was possible, that would solve a lot of problems for Ben, I guess it's distressing that people can't conceive on the island, but he seems to be like running a campaign to no longer have to take people from the outside world. Is that what the others are doing?
I mean, he really seems like he's into the island, and like the idea that there's something about the island that it makes it, you know, unable for pregnant women to give birth, it looks like, right? Because they're all dying well into their pregnancy.
Right. Right? Yeah. It's not quite infertility. It's like, yeah, they
it's, can't it's carry more of term. Like a, yeah. there's something wrong with the land, you know? Yeah. So, well, Ben's trying to solve that problem because I mean, it seems like whoever this Jacob guy is, he has convinced Ben and a lot of people that this island is so special that they need to be able to exist here without the rest of the world.
Well, if I were Ben and leading these others and we were unable to reproduce, but I knew that I was born on the island, I would also want to know the answer to that fucking mystery. Sure. Was I the last person born on the island?
Right. Should we roll down the list of miracle babies?
You could roll that. Yeah. What are the list of miracle babies? We got Aaron.
Right.
Aaron, one of our listeners in the Slack said, is he Azor Ahai since he was born on the island? We've got Ben, so he says. Sure. And we've got Alex, right?
Yeah.
Do we know if Alex was born on the island or if she was born?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's Rousseau that was part of Rousseau's story. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I always forget.
Yeah. So she wasn't on a scientific expedition with a baby, though going on a scientific expedition that pregnant is also suspect,
but then again, we've all met Rousseau.
Yeah, so. True. And then I have another one, but I'll save that for the storm. But, I just wanted to keep a running tally of miracle babies and keep an eye on them. Cause Aaron, Aaron and like the significance of his birth, you know, was at the time and continues to be sort of like a big thing to think about. Like if women can't give birth on this island and Claire gave birth to Aaron, what does that mean about Aaron? You know?
Well, it also gives a reason that why the others are so interested in our losties still. I mean, Ben's, tumor's been fixed, but they still got to mess around with them.
Maybe why they took the kids. Maybe.
I mean, yeah, if you can't reproduce, you have to draft. Might as well draft young, you know what I mean? Another thing that I think about when I think about this episode, and I guess we got it a little bit in Not in Portland as well, is this idea of, like, how did Juliet get from, like, abused ex-wife, virtuous, nice sister, virtuous lab, you know,
science lady,
yep, that's the technical term, fertility expert, yes, to, you know, shooting people on the island. And so you sort of, you know, if it's only been like 3 years thereabouts or a little bit more, that's a fall, right? That's a seduction of Juliet, you know, that she's another now. She's a jungle creep, and she might be like one of the nicer jungle creeps, so she's still a jungle creep. So yeah. the seduction of the island, the fall of the island, sort of.
And this episode sort of gives us the moment where she decides that she's all in, you know, and that's the moment where I feel like that's the moment where she drinks the orange juice, the moment she has with Richard, where it's like, you have to be fully Richard in his gentle, beautiful way as so much as you can handing someone a spiked drink. Is just like, you know, that whatever we're going to do here is something that you want to be a part of. So like, you're in. And I think that that's the importance of that moment is like, that's when Juliet crossed over. As much as we see her turning on Ben, like earlier in the season, and especially all the stuff that when we first meet her, around like, you know, is Jack going to let Ben die? It's that, you know, she's still committed to this, whatever's going on this island. There's still part of her that is very committed to the mission. And I think this episode does a really good job of giving us context for that, which is like, she wanted to solve this pregnancy thing and she wanted to figure this out. And, you know, I understand that, but you know, maybe they could have let her go home for weekends or for like a vacation every once in a while.
I think this episode also does a good job reestablishing how the others are potentially also more cut off than they ever have been. Because we know that we get to see the sub in action, pre-blown up sub, where they were capable of ferrying people back and forth. We get to see Mikhail's hub unblown
Mikhail.
Up. He could get live broadcasts from presumably spy cameras on the mainland. Cause we see, you know, Richard operating, some Rachel video, apparently live. So they were super connected to the outside world before whatever happened. Now we don't know how much they're in the same situation as our Losties, which also means I can't tell where Juliet's true motivation or true, you know, alliances are, because all I know is that she wants to get off the island. I think if we were to make her a stack of her, you know, goals, solving the pregnancy thing might be up there, but not before getting off the island.
Sure.
It's so interesting because, like, Jeff Jensen and his, like, you know, he's so much more fluent in thinking about things theologically than I am. I was rereading his recap and he was talking a lot about Juliet as, like, an Eve figure. And so that idea of, like, Richard being a serpent and the orange juice being, like, the apple sort of thing, is interesting to me. So she take, you know, she takes the fruit. The fruit of knowledge, you know, and like the fruit of the tree of knowledge and whatever. But I don't know that I would say that like that's it. That's the fall, because like she's still so conflicted, and that's who Juliet is. She's an Eve who fell, but like never feels comfortable with that decision. Mm-hmm.
You know? She may either still be falling or already be back on her way up. We can't be sure yet.
We don't know.
I will say something. We mentioned her arrival on the sub. I wanted to speak for a second about the cinematography, because I actually think this, not being a very action-heavy episode, there's a lot of walking, a lot of talking. There are some just gorgeous shots in this movie, and I think the scene where Juliet gets out of the sub and sees the island for the first time, this is sort of a new... they don't do it often. They don't get, you know... what I like to call poetic in their cinematography, like fluid in motion and these super wide shots of the island. Because a lot of these things are like sets, you know, like their jungle is a set and then their beach is a set. But I love that shot. And we are into a period where the cinematographer has actually changed. Michael Bonvillain, did most of the first two seasons, but then kind of after the break of season three that we were talking about, they brought on Court Fay, who is an American cinematographer, has worked on a lot of different TV shows. And I think one of the things you can see is there's a little, the lighting has improved a little bit, especially the jungle lighting, I think, is a little brighter. And, we're getting some really cool wide shots. Like I always stop at that scene where Juliet gets out and she stands up on the sub and then they pan back and you just see how massive the island is. We're not often reminded, but Lost does a good job of checking in every once in a while with the size and scope of the island and really showing off some of the cool stuff they got in Hawaii. So, this is, despite not having a ton of action, one of the better looking episodes of Lost.
Yeah, so I think you could, now that you bring up the cinematography, I think you could really tell in the difference in the way they do jungles.
Mm-hmm. It's in the lighting. There's, you know, you see this, we actually saw this in our Black Sails watch, where when you flip over from like a season two to a season three and the budget starts to ramp up a little bit, lighting is one of the things that changes, you know, the quality of your backgrounds and things like that. And then I don't know, I haven't read a ton of behind the scenes about this sub piece, but I assume, they built, you know, a little platform there for that sub, and they built a piece of that sub and it looks really cool.
It's made of foam, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's really striking for them to do it in like, you know, like a daytime shot, because you can't cover up.
Yeah.
You can't cover up mistakes. So the fact that whole sequence looks so good is it's a great attention to detail. That's why we love Lost. A lot of attention to detail.
I want to shout out. So I've been pretty hard on the like Jack, Kate, Sawyer love triangle, because it gets pretty boring. And like now we're in a bit of a quadrangle with Juliet and stuff like that and whatever. And that could be
Jack
boring.
Is switching teams. It's crazy.
It could be boring. It could be not, whatever. But I mean, shout out to Josh Holloway's Where's Kate look on the beach. Mm-hmm. And then his like, he'll hug Jack before he'll hug Kate, because it's less awkward for him to do so. And his like wounded puppy dogness of it all. I think it's incredibly strong. The Sawyer work continues to be great. So, as you know, I will roll my eyes at love triangle or quadrangle when it's boring, but like I think that Sawyer moment really works. And then it also, I mean, obviously also the Sawyer Saeed Juliet scene, that might be actually my favorite scene of the whole episode. When Juliet's like, here's what we're not going to do, boys. Sit on our high horses right now. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I love
you. Forget I know who you are.
It does feel like that there is a certain touch that Lost has. I think we talked about this. Every time there's like a big reunion on the beach sequence, when they go to that like short montage and there's very little dialogue and it's just a lot of like face acting, as people are seeing each other. They did this, there was one at the end of either season one or season two, right? Where there's just like this killer and Giacchino like comes in with the score.
Every 5 minutes. It's like Sun and Jin seeing each other.
This one is like, usually it's like the score comes in and just crushes your soul. But this one, it really relies on Josh Holloway's performance very specifically, because it's all sort of focused around Sawyer reuniting with people. And yeah, it just rules. There are a lot of really well-written, well-acted, well-choreographed scenes in this particular episode of Lost.
It's almost like they've got a handle on this season now. Sure. 16 episodes in.
Just in time. Well, that's another good point, I think, actually, is so we're in the final like run of the season from here on out, right? And so I like the fact that we got to see the scene that we saw at the opening scene of the season, Juliet and book club and downtown and crying and all that sort of stuff. We got to see it again in this episode. And it felt like, okay, here we go again. But this time we really know what we're doing and we're going to go from here sort of thing.
Well, and it also sort of refocuses us, because as I keep mentioning, Ben said he's going to be back in a week. So it's refocusing us on the storyline that, like, now that Jack and crew are back at the beach, something is going to happen between our survivors and the others, as we understand them. Like, something's coming.
Right.
And so the momentum is toward that. And Juliet, she fits right in, you know, to that whole plan, because she's our science person on the inside.
Science lab lady, I think is what I called her. Yeah. And it's interesting that there's no B plot at all in this episode. Like, Claire being sick is kind of the B plot, but that's actually the A plot. So
Charlie not running down the beach with Aaron.
Well, because it's the prestige structure this episode is, where they show you a thing, they present you with the weird fucking magic trick, which is that Juliet, you know, has the cure because she's been doing it the whole time. And in the last episode, it's like, none of that was what exactly you thought it was. So it heads out on a high note. I would say, to minorly disagree with Joanna, that next week is the beginning of the fall to the end of the season. And that this might be the cap of, I think they're finally out of Otherton.
A bookend.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
And they're back on the beach. And Juliet is the pivot point to how the season's going to end. But I think it all starts falling down the hill next week. As we'll see, you know, when we talk about that in the not this part of the podcast, because no spoilers for that.
The last thing I want to say before we bop to any other corners we might do or something like that is just to note that this is called, you know, One of Us, right? Which is a parallel to an Henry Gale episode title, which is One of Them, right? And also, I have to imagine, a really important reference to Jack's tattoo. She ties her tarp amongst them, but she is not one of them.
She is not one of them. Aggressive, not making French horn out.
I don't think she's fully appreciating how nice it is that they gave her a tarp. Like, tarps are like the main prime currency of the beach. So
there's a lot of them. It's an inflated currency.
That's true. The value of the tarp has gone down in recent days.
Really, Juliet's living situation in like 2 days just went to shit. It was like living in a house, gassed in the jungle. Oh, hey, tarp. It's just, you know, not a forward arc.
Yeah, bet you miss those muffins in book club now.
That's right. Where's your downtown now, Juliet? All right. Our Jungle of Mystery moment is, what does the island have against pregnant women? I think we covered that pretty well in our general discussion.
Yeah, we still have questions about that one.
Yeah, we still have lots of questions.
Save those for later.
Neil, do we have any Giacchino corners this week?
We have two Giacchino tracks. One is a little mix on the traveling theme. It's called Juliet is Lost, just in case you weren't clear about what's going on with Juliet these days. And then there is, later, there's a variation on Jack's theme that is called Beach Blanket Bonding,
which
I'm confused as to why it's not Hurley's theme, because the most beach blanket bonding that occurred was between Hurley and Juliet, in my opinion. But Giacchino and I can disagree on this one.
Beach blanket bondage.
Oh, wait, no, because Jack actually
knots.
Jack gives her a blanket. So he comes up and he's like, here's your blanket. P.S. Your tarp's over there. We voted.
Bondage. Blanket bondage. Bondage. You cowards.
Beach blanket bondage. You cowards. to the jungle of Kistery, Joanna, of our, each week, we decide who needs to kiss in episodes. We put it up as a Twitter poll. Last week, we had Kate and Juliet handcuffed in a jungle. How did we do in our jungle of Kistery?
Listen, it all turned out exactly as we expected it would. Diana the Chili, which is Kate's mom and the chili that was thrown on her, 3.8% of the vote, not very low. Mm-hmm. Kate and Juliet Dry, who needs that? 6.9% of the vote. No one needs Kate and Juliet Dry. Kate and Cassidy, Cassidy dressed as Kate, a little Kate Austin doppelganger situation.
Little Kate squared.
Yeah, 31.3% of the vote, pretty high. But of course, it's Kate and Juliet muddy. 58.1% of the vote. So
before we go,
Before
we go to this week, let's skip to our official podcast check-in, because I found out some interesting information about that Kate and Juliet muddy thing.
Ooh.
We were like, why did they throw down? Why did they fall down all of a sudden?
Can't wait to read this script.
Neil will be reading Damon Lindelof. I'll be reading Carlton Cuse from this week's official Lost podcast check-in that happened back in 2007.
All right. Was the mud scene with Juliet of importance? By Carlton's Banjo.
Ooh.
And I quote, "Hi, I'm aware that Lost tries as much as it can to avoid meaningless scenes." That's underlined. So, how ended the wet, sticky scene with Kate and Juliet in Left Behind on the show? Bears its any real significance, or was it just for the fun of television? What did it bear, like, any significance?
I feel like this person is French. Whoever wrote this. Bears it any real significance? I like that as a phrase.
Wow.
Says Carlton Cuse. Honestly, there was we had a different scene that we were going to put in the show that involved them having a lot of mud on them, and we had already shot a scene in which they were muddy at the end of the show. So for continuity purposes, we had to have them slip and fall in the mud. We had sort of an idea, and then we had ultimately thought was a better idea about how to sort of execute what on with that whole sequence when the monster came and hit the fence.
So it was, just for continuity.
Yeah, that's the only reason. They had to slip in the mud. Sure. We filmed the end mud scene too early. We had a predator thing planned.
Someone accidentally made Elizabeth Mitchell too dirty at the end of the episode, so we had to go back.
And I do want to note that Kate is nice and squeaky clean in this episode after they get to the beach, and Juliet still has to be like muddy the whole episode.
Kate still knows where the cave showers are. Remember the cave showers?
Yeah. You don't want to help Juliet out and like,
I don't
be like, here's, you know.
Honestly, it's a sign of beach camp privilege, and I think we should stand up against it. Show Juliet where the damn showers are.
Yeah, beach towel bondage. Make it happen.
Well, let's pivot and see if Juliet Muddy gets to kiss someone this week.
All right, so we've got a few nominees from for Kistery this week from our listeners from the live watch in the Slack. Ganesh wanted to nominate Ethan and the suit. This is the most formal, I think, that we've seen Ethan so far. Ooh. So, Ethan and his nice threads. Melissa suggests Jack and Sawyer, who give that nice like bro hug on the beach when they're reunited. Nice to see you. Haven't seen you since the dock, right? Because Sawyer never saw Jack on Hydra.
Did you figure out the fish biscuits? And Jack's like, what? And Sawyer's like, dumbass.
I thought not. All right. Steph has suggested others in khaki. This is not something I have noticed before, but I will be on the lookout for it. Apparently the others like a nice muted palette in their clothing. And then lastly, this is my vote, not to tip the scales, but Adam suggests a nice thruple, which is Juliet, Sawyer, and Saeed. So,
I mean, I think the question Adam is really trying to ask here is, how soon did Claire really need that medicine?
Yeah. Well, we could all share a secret.
Could Saeed and Sawyer have their mud scene? That's my question.
Listen, Saeed and Sawyer have been through a lot.
For continuity, guys.
I'm ready for them to make up.
So if you follow us on Storm Podcast on Twitter, that poll will be tweeted out. You could vote for it, and you could let your favorites win. That's how it goes. We have a book club this week, because there are books. Join? Yeah. Book club.
Oh, yeah, Ben, still out of the book club, as you might have surmised, and he talks about Carrie a bit, and he finds it depressing. I actually have some Storm thoughts about this, but,
What do we think of Ben's take here? Is Carrie depressing?
No.
I don't think so. Yeah, okay. But Ben,
well,
he got kicked out of the book club for good reason.
If he just started reading it, I would say yes. Carrie. Okay.
I have some further
twist in it.
Thoughts. But, okay. But what I will say is that I think I now understand why Guess I'm Out of the Book Club is one of my favorite lines, is I forgot it's in two different episodes. so nice. They said it twice. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Michael Emerson crushes that line every time.
Goat. Yeah.
Well, we do have some other Storm thoughts that include Carrie and some other things, which will come to you right after this.
Hey folks, Joanna here. I just wanted to tell you about a new podcast that we think you might be interested in listening to. Ruined is a new horror movie podcast hosted by Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby, where Hallie, a horror movie aficionado, ruins horror movies for her friend Allison, who is, like me, too afraid to watch them herself but is dying to know everything about the plot.
This show includes fun segments where Hallie asks Allison to guess the twist, or what would you do? Ooh, what would you do is good for a horror movie. And at the end of every episode, they weigh in on whether scaredy cats can actually watch the movie scream-free, or if they are right to skip the scaries altogether and head right to the Wikipedia description for the spoilers, like Dave does for DC Universe movies.
So if you love horror movies, or you are way too afraid to watch them, like Joanna and myself, or if you're just a film nerd, guilty. This is the podcast for you. The first three episodes are available now. They include looks at The Ring, The Babadook, and Candyman. Check out Ruined wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, now is the time on the podcast where we dance and thank our Small Council subscribers. These are the folks who subscribe at the $10 level or above. We got a bunch of new subscribers, I think, because we're doing like some new podcasty fun bonus stuff at the $10 level, so we got some new folks in there. So I want to welcome to the family Trevor Ead, like mead. I just like mead, so I decided to read the pronunciation guide. Sam D'Angelo, Vera Johansson, Gear, Maureen Maurer, Rob Perry Hall, Michael R. Cleland, Bashir Ustache, Cecily Stepney, Matthew, Kaylee Hicks, David Adams, David Moran, AJ Cabbage, Del Martinez, Chelsea Doyle, Mark Lawson, Michelle Cahill, Ben Grieving, and Christopher Vanjonic. Thank you guys so much.
And I have some names of some Small Council members who've been with us for a bit. Here we go. Thank you. Gabriel, Colorado, Dane Mayhair, B. Max, Kate Thrams, Laura Anderson, Jeff Ruberg, Laura Atiu, Benjamin Jacoby, Reginator Cakes, Gustavo Villarreal, DJ Empirical, Phil, Jackie, Meme Lord, Jessica Lair, Sviv... He invites you to take your best shot as the pronunciation guide. Sverier Svigvason.
Who just had a birthday. Happy birthday.
Who just had a birthday. And is much easier to add our Patreon. It's fantastic. Manu Mishra, Megan McLeod, David Koplos, Daniel Aaron, Siegel Greenberg, Lily Lim, and Derek Dock. Thank you guys so much.
And guess what? I have a list of folks who I would like to thank as well. This list includes Vince Lewis, Russell Griffin, Philip Durrett, Tyler Iman, Elizabeth Chandler, Karen Eitner, Einter. Yeah, there we go. Gregory Gergarian, Brandon Lee Tenney, Kelly Stollard, Melanie Rodriguez, Sarah Carmichael, Spencer Howard, Huang Lee, Michael Sample, Jenna Mandel, Chris Ernst, Rosa Peretta, Ashish Sridharan, Kayla Sargent, and Annie AK. Thank you all so very much.
And we are back for the storm. If you remember, Locke is absent somewhere in the woods with Ben. We don't know. Apparently, he's going to meet up with
probably
you
doing some antagonisty shit.
Dude, definitely doing some antagonisty shit. I don't know why I would say we don't know where he is because we're in the storm. But
shining his halo.
That's right. Let's pretend we don't know where he is. And for sure, Locke antagonist check-in isn't going to be here this week. Do we have an antagonist check-in?
Yes.
Neil Miller.
Well, I think it's fair to do a Juliet antagonist check-in with that last scene there. Although we did do a lot of Juliet breakdown in the calm. But now I guess we could talk about how Juliet's plan plays out, which as I'm talking about it, I don't really remember where she's going with this. She's about to fall in love with Kiwi's about to show up.
She doesn't fall in love with Kimi, let's be clear.
No. But she starts down the Sawyer episode. Road, right? This is at some point
well,
she and Jack.
The Sawyer thing doesn't really
let's
happen.
Let's talk through it a little bit because I don't remember.
Yeah, the first like real Juliet Sawyer stuff happens when the freighter blows up and he like swims to shore because he's jumped off the helicopter. And she's just sitting there like Captain Jack Sparrow swigging booze and being like, look, there's our ride. It's just smoke. And they assume that everyone's dead. So Jack's dead. Kate's dead. So the love quadrangle becomes just a twofer. And then you spend some time with them. They have each other's backs and it's this whole thing. Leading up to LaFleur, one of the best episodes of Lost. So
Absolutely. It's
a little while. That's the end of season four. So it's a little while before Juliet and Sawyer, that whole thing. So mostly it's what we're going to see for the rest of the season, unfortunately, is some like Juliet Jack making Kate jealous. And so Kate like sort of flings herself at Sawyer. It's not great. I have to say, it's not my favorite.
I mean, it's something to be prepared for, at least. I forgot that the triangle kind of goes on. Or the triangle lives on longer than I think it does before it splits into basically two pairs.
Correct.
Yeah, this episode was a little bit harder to watch for me because it has like good things I can appreciate about good television, but the potency of all the mysteries in this one are kind of gone, knowing which ones are going to be resolved and how they're resolved and which ones aren't, in a way that hasn't been a huge problem for me yet on this show during the rewatch, but I have a feeling might be a bit more of a problem in like season four when people are darting around the jungle trying to get to helicopters and back and whatnot. But maybe we'll see. I don't know. I like this one. The Juliet performance drags you through. If it was just a story about Juliet, it'd still be like a good episode of television. But like the twist at the end definitely. Like, it didn't tip off some huge turn in my mind, so it was more like, oh, that's an interesting way to end the episode, but aggressive not tying doesn't mean she's going to be, like, tying up Claire and dragging her in the jungle again, like, you know, we could have feared when we started this episode,
right.
not knowing the end.
You know, she is involved with Sun and, like, doing, like, a sonogram for Sun and all that sort of stuff like that. Like, that's what she's there for, is to, like, sort of spy on Sun, you know, on the fertility front or the caring to term front. And then also, like, Juliet is something that, you know, Juliet's basically with the Losties. She doesn't, like, go back to the others in a meaningful way. She's with the Losties. She gets like exposed by Sawyer for like reporting to Ben and stuff like that. But she's like with the Losties for the rest of the time. But what I love about her being with them is that she's just like, she's kind of like Saeed in that she's just like shrewder than a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And so like when the freighter people get there, she's just like, she's got her eyes sort of squinting at them the whole time. Right. And she's just like,
well, and she's operating with so much more information. Like Juliet right. enters the camp and she is like someone who's been watching the show, you know, like it's like, it really is the experiment of like, you know, someone who knows everything about these characters shows up and she can create all kinds of havoc. But also, yeah, now that we're in the storm, it's important to remember that, you know, Juliet becomes one of the good guys, I guess. Or she stays on Team Survivor.
Then they kill her. Yeah. Right, right. Well, but I mean, like...
Well, you're not allowed to get too good, I guess.
But I think you're always, like, unsure if Juliet might... Because she right. does some like, unexpected alliance hopping. Within the survivors as we go forward. And that's the Juliet. She's a wild card. You're not necessarily sure where she's going to go.
Yeah. No, I love it. I would follow, honestly, of the people that you're supposed to follow, like who would you follow into the jungle? I'm definitely following Juliet around. Like she seems like she knows where all the shit is. She knows all the files on everybody. Listen, I'm sorry. If I'm like survivor number 34 and this lady rolls up, once I get to know her, I might not be on Team Jack anymore. Saeed is, there's a good case to be made that Saeed is extremely competent at all times, but,
I heard he's very good, you know.
I don't know. Like, if Juliet is here and if, you know, if she was there to recruit, I'm ready to be recruited.
Honestly, my favorite leadership team, in the entire series, and we get it mostly in season five, is Juliet and Sawyer. Juliet and Sawyer mm-hmm. as like leading the team of people who are hopping through time. They're incredibly competent and a really good team. And even when they disagree, they're like really competent leaders together. So,
I mean, yeah. And that's all part of what makes that whole, you know, the Juliet right. and Sawyer thing works.
Right. So and well. That's why when we did the finale special and we interviewed all those people, everyone was like, Juliet and Sawyer at the vending machine. That's my number one finale moment because she just becomes mm-hmm. so important and their connection becomes so important. I
wonder how long it's going to take folks who are in the calm and they obviously can't hear this to sort of pick up on that. And I think when I was first going through, the first time I really thought of like Juliet and Sawyer as a thing probably wasn't until that beach scene where he like comes out of the right. water and it's like they're the only two left and it's like, all right, well, maybe.
I think this is my problem with the way the episode played is it's a good episode, but in the back of my head, I'm just like sad for her because she never gets off that island.
I know.
I mean, yeah, it's so,
like,
tragic.
Even the hope kind of like flitted away into like a plot thing that I was going to not have to deal with because, yeah, Juliet goes hard, but does not
go home.
Achieve her ultimate goal.
Yeah, it's true. And like, it's the Sawyer and Juliet thing is interesting because for a number of reasons. But like, I think our live watchers have picked up on it who watch with us in the Slack because mm-hmm. as careful as our live watchers are to protect the commies from spoilers, like whenever you see Josh Holloway to Elizabeth Mitchell on screen, like when she like tased him at the very beginning of the season, people in our live watch were like, oh my God, no, sparks.
Tase me, daddy.
Tase, sparks yeah, I mean, flying.
We're not going to like say that this was a huge, deep cut find that the writer's room stumbled upon. Okay. They just took like two of the best looking people ever and are like, oh, cool. Let's put them together.
What if I smash these two Barbies together,
right? Yes. And they're like Kiss. Incredibly good actors, and the chemistry yeah. is very good on screen for a lot of the cast on Lost, and that's probably why it works so well. But you know, Elizabeth Mitchell just has it with everybody.
Yeah, there should
she
be
just has chemistry with everyone.
A spinoff show where Sawyer falls in love with somebody every week. It should be an anthology show called Josh Holloway Falls in Love.
You got to have at least one wounded searching on the beach shot in every episode. Like, Kate, where is she?
it's Josh Holloway Island. So there's an island with Josh Holloway on it. And every week somebody sails out there. And the goal is to not fall in love with him. But everybody does by the end of the episode.
You can't help it. The girls can't help it. Yeah. And the guys, too, I would imagine. Yeah. So I'm tempted to argue that Juliet episodes are just great episodes because I love Not in Portland and I love this episode. However, I was getting this episode confused with the next Juliet episode, which is season 4, which is like more Goodwin and his wife Harper. And this whole thing where like the other woman refers to Juliet because she's having an extramarital affair with Goodwin. I forgot that there were two separate episodes, even though I just
The Juliet character assassination that's coming.
Yeah, it's just like we don't need. It's sort of like the Jack Tattoo episode. Like we did it. We did Juliet's story. We did it really well. We don't need what this is. We don't need like the whole Goodwin thing, and then Harper shows up, and it's just kind of silly. So, and it's a bad episode too because it's like Daniel and Charlotte are trying to like neutralize poisonous gas, but they won't tell anyone what their plan is. It's a bad episode of Lost. I don't like it.
I don't like the Charlotte slander, but we'll get there.
They did it with this episode and they should have probably stopped here is my point. There's a lot more Ben to learn about. And so I want to go back to a couple things. Number one, miracle baby list. I don't think Ben was not born on the island.
Correct.
I don't think. Mm-hmm. So he's
but
actually.
Why not throw off the Call Me's by talking?
I know. Yeah. I played along.
It's the same with Alex as like Ben's kid. They still seem to be attached to that one, which I think is delightful.
I think it's clear now that. I don't know. Anyway, so Ben, not a miracle baby, but fun fact, right? Ethan's a miracle baby. Juliet delivers Ethan in season 5.
Ethan gets a lot of retconning, a lot better retconning than he deserved. And I think it's really just the Mapother energy. They couldn't resist going back to it.
It's just every time they went back to change Ethan's story, it worked well enough for them. So they just kind of kept going.
So it's Ethan, Alex, and Aaron who are our miracle children of Lost, as far as I can tell. So, because I think Daniel's born off island. Yeah, they get Eloise off island before she gives birth.
What? Okay, remind me what happens to Sun again? Does have
and
the baby.
But
off island.
Jacob right. And the Man in Black okay. are also born on the island.
True. Yes.
Well, we'll see.
How
much do we believe their story?
Completely. It's told from the position of the show. It isn't even a flashback.
I guess
we have
true.
To. If we don't believe that, then, well, I mean, that's what
season 6
of this podcast is going to be.
Now I really wish Across the Sea started with the smoke monster. And I'm not talking about the actor who plays a smoke monster, but I'm talking about like a sentient cloud of smoke sitting in a rocking chair being like, gather around, children.
I'll tell you how I was born.
I would love that. To further dive into the Ben of it all, let's just one more time so that Ben hears me. Not a miracle baby.
Right.
You're not special, Ben. But what he was like a bullied and abused teen, young man.
Right.
Who takes vengeance on the person who bullied him, which is his
at
father.
Prom, as
which
like
makes
you do.
Him carry.
Yeah.
I think Ben doesn't like Carrie because he sees a little too much of himself in Carrie. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Roger Workman agrees.
Roger Workman and his flat, flat Dharma beer.
Roger had big plans for that beer. We all know it. So.
I can't believe that we go from this episode to the end of the series where Ben and Hurley are like, we're the best. And we're like, yeah, you are. Fucking Ben. What an arc.
But great he doesn't get to go in the church, so it's okay.
He doesn't go in the church, that's true. So he could be in Lost too.
So speaking of which, I wanted to talk about like something that I would like to start tracking in the storm, which is Hurley as the new Jacob check-in, because this episode is just another like fine brick in the wall for that, right? Like Hurley sitting down with Juliet, and you're like, yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy.
I mean, yes, but again, you seem to have sidestepped the obvious threat he's there. They send the largest male to sit next to the smallest blonde other and be like, that's where we killed the last one of you. I get we
but
like
also
her.
That's not how I read that scene
but
at all.
they know that they're sending Hurley.
And yeah, Hurley's never like, despite his size, he's never like, he's not an imposing,
right?
He's not like a bullish figure.
They've met Hurley, we're gonna assume here, so they know that Hurley is a gentle but funny and also like honest. And I think that it is good because we are starting to see, Joanna's right, where we're starting to see the trend pick up where Hurley is doing leadership things, some of which includes what we saw him do with Sawyer, where it was like he faked Sawyer right. out into being nice
yeah.
and convincing Sawyer that he needs to be a leader. But in reality, that's Hurley leading Sawyer to help secure the camp.
Behind every great man, there's a Hurley.
No, I love, and I think that like the specific choice of the other campers to send Hurley to talk to Juliet is like, yeah, we do need to let her know that we don't trust her and that Ethan is buried right over there. But we don't, I think that there is like not even Saeed is being very like practical about this. And because, you know, season one, Saeed would have had her strapped to a tree by now.
Right.
And he doesn't do that anymore.
I don't do that anymore. When Sawyer, did you stop? I missed that happening, but okay.
You know, I think Sawyer, he's got enough to worry about with Kate at this point and Jack. And it's really interesting, though, that we do this whole thing. And there's this scene in the middle where I feel like they should be more worried about Jack. Like, not us, the audience, but the other survivor campers, right? They should be a little more concerned with the fact that Jack is like all in on Juliet at this point.
I really wish that someone had just laughed at Jack when he was like, she's under my protection.
Right. Where was Sawyer for, because they did that in the jungle at the beginning. So where was Sawyer for that one?
To be like, okay, buddy.
All right.
Well, and this is knowing that I was looking ahead at next week's episode, and I believe it's the one that involves one of my all time favorite Jack and Sawyer scenes, which is their ping pong match.
Oh.
So that we are building toward Sawyer and Jack sort of remember we were talking a couple episodes ago about this, you know, collision course that is Jack and his leadership, you know, which has decided that Juliet needs to stay, and Sawyer and the leadership that Hurley is fostering through him. And I love that it sort of is about to come to a head in a very fun and unexpected way.
Comes to ping pong.
Something I think that's really wild in this episode is that Juliet like is like, hey, Saeed, you're a torturer, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
back off. But she's also like, hey, James, remember when you shot that guy outside a shrimp truck? Nobody else knows that. Not even Kate, right?
Like, definitely not Saeed.
Yeah.
So that was probably weird.
Nobody knows that. And Juliet's like, I got your file, buddy. I read it. I know that Sarah's happy and you killed a dude. Those are two facts that I know, at least.
Oh, and then the Boston Red Sox won the World Series.
Yeah. Figured that out.
That was one of my favorite things about the live watch. We, not to like, I don't know, transplant it over here or whatever, but like this idea that like, Ben is always ready with files because he's almost always wearing that satchel that mm-hmm. has files in it. But Juliet's memorized all the files. she's leveled up.
It's a competence thing.
Like, I got your files up here.
Ben is too concerned with how much Carrie makes him feel about himself. And so he doesn't have time to read the files. He needs a satchel. Yeah.
So this episode was originally titled The Truth About Lying. It was supposed to be a Charlie episode. What do you think was about?
Does it involve stealing the baby again?
The truth about lying. I'm so glad they didn't do that, because honestly, I think Greatest Hits is the best Charlie episode.
Well, it's like, mm-hmm. At first I was like, okay, maybe they just moved the Greatest Hits plot down, but that doesn't make any sense here.
It doesn't make any sense with the title,
The Truth About Lying.
This feels like more Charlie character assassination. I'm glad they didn't.
It was just not character assassination, just like more Charlie trying to get heroin, honestly.
It'd be like, so Juliet shows up, and in the flashback, we see Charlie doing like a catch me if you can with like a drug bust, pretending to be like a pilot or like a copywriter or something.
A doctor.
When you concur. And then they're like, Dom, what accents you got off your sleeve? He's like, none. American, maybe? And they're like, oh, never mind.
The truth about lying. Oh, my God. Like, I mourn the Tampa job a little bit, mm-hmm. but I am, like, endlessly grateful that they didn't do that.
The truth about lying.
I think this episode is so good, and I think Greatest Hits is an incredible episode of television. So, like, great job, guys. Dodge that bullet.
Yeah, we don't need to pivot back to Charlie yet.
Yeah, he's just here, like, holding Aaron's hand. Like,
right.
And Claire's hand at the same time. Great. Whatever the opposite of stealing a baby is, that's what he does in this episode.
Well, he protects, yeah, he does the right thing. He babysits, he protects Aaron. He looks concerned about Claire, but doesn't seem as interested in finding a solution there. Yeah, I mean, Charlie's... We are now, what, let's see.
Yeah, I didn't try to shoot Juliet.
Yeah, what is... Oh,
we are five episodes away from Greatest Hits.
So yeah. Charlie got upset.
There.
Charlie got upset. Charlie's like, took Claire and Charlie got upset.
Charlie so was...
buried him over there.
A point in the pro column for Charlie this week. He was the first and maybe only person to notice that Claire was bleeding profusely at the the beach union meeting that they were having.
Yeah. No one's paying attention to Claire.
Like, all of a sudden, Claire is bleeding and like Jack is still going on about living together and protecting people or whatever. Claire's just bleeding.
The baby's crying and Claire's still asleep and Charlie's the only one that's like, this is weird. Everyone else is like, fucking Aaron.
Are we to believe that Charlie is the only one paying attention to what's going on with Claire? Come on, man. You know, this is society.
I got to say, Locke would have noticed, too.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Locke cares
about if he wasn't Claire, around, out traipsing around in the jungle.
All right. Question that I don't know the answer to, despite the fact that I'm the one who's rewatched the series a couple times. Can Jacob reach off island?
Yes.
In a way, yes. But does he do... Yes, he like... We see him touching all the candidates in, I think it's, I don't remember which episode it is. It's not the lighthouse, but it's around there, right? Touching all the candidates so that we know that they're special, right?
Mm-hmm.
And placing a guiding hand on them, leading them towards the island and stuff like that. We don't know how much of an involved god he is, but he's somewhat involved. But can he cure cancer off island? I
think so, yes, because I think he partially... He keeps John alive after his fall. So that's a partial healing.
Oh, that's
healing.
True. That's true.
And my explanation of it would be if the island is the cork that keeps the smoke in, but the light is something that exists in all people, Jacob can touch the light. And the light exists in every person individually. It's not based around
and
the
like-
island.
I always get the idea that, like, whatever Jacob's power is, it's not as strong off the island. So, like, that's the possible. Idea of, like, oh, he can cure cancer, but he can't just, like, cure everybody's cancer because that's too powerful.
I also just have questions. We constantly have questions of, like, at what point is Ben operating
off real
rogue?
Jacob? Yeah.
Yeah. And when is he not? And so, like, the idea of, like, blackmailing a fertility doctor to stay on the island to encourage, like, you know, women to give birth on the island, and thus sort of monkeying around with some innocent woman's cancer off Ellen. Does that feel like a Jacob move? It doesn't to me, but
it does
I don't
feel
know.
Like it could be a Ben lie.
That feels like a Ben lie rather than a Jacob move to me.
The cancer part, like the part where she actually has the, you know, maybe she just never had cancer and, you know, they just film her with her child who was born normally. You know, I mean, you imagine that at that point, Ben is very much aware of how much Juliet wants to leave. And so he's just doing everything, you know, he's willing to do the maximum amount to keep her here.
I will say the one thing that I appreciate about the other woman, which is still an episode of that I don't love, is like the fact that it becomes crystal clear that Ben sent Goodwin off to die. Yeah. Because he was jealous. Ben, you freaking incel. But yeah, it's I don't know, it just doesn't feel like what's the worst thing that we know Jacob does in pursuit of whatever it is?
Brings them to the island?
He brings people to the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that, like, Juliet and Rachel and all of that is involved in that, you know?
Juliet is a candidate.
Okay.
So, possible Juliet got pulled to the island by Jacob.
Initially, yeah. But then Ben, you can see how Ben would want to keep her there for his own reasons.
Also,
yeah, I see a lot of validity in this. Ben made all that shit up about
I don't think she had cancer a second time. That seems...
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that seems like the specific lie that Ben used because he's trying to solve something. I guess, and this is a connection I'm looking forward to trying to make is like the connection between like all the things Ben does about like, you know, solving this fertility issue versus, is that anything that Jacob ever really cared about? I don't really remember.
Yeah, I'm also curious as to why he's trying to solve the fertility issue, period. And one thing that, the only thing I could think about that I couldn't mention in the calm is he wants to stop recruiting because recruiting, every time you recruit, you give Widmore another chance at getting back to the island.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense.
You give him a trail to follow.
Yeah. If the island, you know, keeps going the Jacob way, more people are going to find the island, and he wants to keep the island all to himself so he can rule it. And so it needs to self-propagate. But that's the only reason I can think about. There isn't a positive side to having a whole bunch of other children living on the island. Like, the island isn't powered on children.
Right. I'm also curious in this, at this point, what we think, because I don't feel like they know yet the full extent to which they're going to use Richard Alpert. Obviously Richard has some like upcoming stuff with John, this season. I don't know that we know the immortal stuff about him until Ben flashback.
Yeah.
Do we already know that?
No. That's the episode.
Yeah.
The Ben flashback.
Yeah. And that's season four. So there's
no, stuff- that's this season. That's in like three episodes.
Oh, the man behind the curtain. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The man behind the curtain. Okay. So they already know he's immortal. But my question is, like, what's his job?
That's the thing is, like, they find these fun ways to work him in. It feels like one of those characters that started out as a curiosity. Like, they were just like, well, he's in the background now, but.
I feel like he started as one of their agents on the mainland.
Right.
And then Richard gets, like, super centered on the island going forward. He's not really like a mainland guy, except for when he like goes to test Locke and stuff like that. But right now he's like the Middle-Earth guy. And then that's really quickly going to change. But I'm also like, it feels beneath Richard's dignity to be like taping Rachel in a park with her child in a newspaper.
Well, maybe there's a rotation because we know Tom's off island right now. And Richard's on the island.
Yeah. So maybe it's like more of a communal approach, you know?
Communal creeps.
Communal creeps.
Who is creeping? Who is drugging orange juice and filming ladies and drafting Michael, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Listen, I'm for a more communal approach to running any society. However, I do disagree with a lot of their methods.
It takes a village of creeps.
On the other side of society, on this island, no one is paying attention to Claire's baby who is wailing in its crib.
I mean, they've got different priorities. Actually, I don't know what their priorities are anymore. And they have ping pong. The food really is picking up. Sawyer is now nice and like leading the camp. It's time for some drama on the beach, I think. Yeah. So good thing we got some stuff coming up. Right, Neil?
Yes. In fact, next week we've got Catch 22, which is a Dez and Penny episode. Well, it's mostly a Dez episode, but Penny's there too.
Yeah, every episode named Catch 22, you know, full of good and easy decisions, we know.
Easy book club next week.
Yep. Until then, where can people find more of our work around the internet? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Oh, I'm back working at Vanity Fair, so you can find me at vanityfair.com on those podcasts. Little Gold Men, Still Watching, is going to start up again soon. And you can find me, we're wrapping up Truth vs. Hollywood. This is the season finale of Truth vs. Hollywood. We are wrapping up American Gangsta. And that sounds about right. That's about it. Feels like a gay time. That's it. All right, done.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com and on Twitter at rejects at one perfect shot. And don't forget to follow our show at Storm Podcast for all of the fun polls and tweets and whatnots.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA70, and you can listen to me talk about pop culture on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, wherever fine podcasts are found and downloaded. Still for free, though. Free podcasts. And always, I will be here every week, usually talking about Lost, but absolutely telling you to not fall down. It's very important. Be safe. Also, wash your hands, wear a mask. You know the drill. See you next week.